Do you ever have any trouble at an eating establishment with the food quality or service? You know, I suppose some of us have. You know, like, you know, waiter, waiter, there's a fly in my soup. And they say, don't worry, the frog will get it in a minute. You know? Or there's this food isn't fit for a pig. And he'll say, just a minute and I'll go get some. Or waiter, waiter, I can't eat this chicken. And I want you to call the manager. He says the manager won't eat it either. So, but you know, I've been through some places where the service wasn't all that good, and I left saying, you know, the only thing that you've got to give me is your service, because your food is, I could find any of that food someplace else. Well, the similar thing is we look at the continue looking at the spiritual gifts. That we're looking at all these spiritual gifts, and particularly we're using the text from Romans, the 12th chapter, as the primary area in which we look at the spiritual gifts. And as we look at all these gifts, we want to realize first, we want you to help sort out what is your spiritual gift. And we want you to hone in on that and work on that spiritual gift. We want other people to also be aware of what the spiritual gifts are and realize that everyone has a different one, and so we're not going to get anxious because everybody doesn't respond the same way that we do, because they have a different spiritual gift and they have a different type of motivation and feeling. But all this works together, of course, for the work of the Lord. And everyone has probably a unique mixture of two or more gifts, producing a unique shade that God can use in a unique way in the body of Christ. And so, and if there's any confusion about what is your spiritual gift, probably your wife can enlighten you on that for some of you. But, you know, you may score and think you score very highly in some areas and low in others, but it doesn't really matter. It's the perspective here. You know, we want to look at the definition, the description, the dangers, or the possible liabilities this evening of the spiritual gift of serving. Romans 12:7 says, if we can serve others, we should serve. It is the gift of a servant. It is the ministry. It is the gift of helps and the motivation to help others by meeting physical and practical needs. And it's often behind the scenes. You know, they might be working in the kitchen. They might be putting chairs and tables up and down and moving them. They might be greeters. They might help in the children's ministry, the nursery, the sound engineer. You know, all these are gifts that are not necessarily noticed unless they're not being performed or unless there's a reason for it. But we are all necessary gifts. And usually the people, that perform these gifts do it in a very quiet and unassuming manner, and they do it in the background. Won't receive much of any recognition, but then these are people that don't need it. They are content to be faithful and to know that they are making a difference. We're all supposed to be servants to some degree, and Jesus said this in Mark the 9th chapter in verse 35. It's a marvelous verse for all of us, and particularly it is the verse in which we mold servanthood around. Mark 9:35, and after Jesus sat down and told the 12 disciples to gather around him, he said, if you want the place of honor, you must become a slave and serve others. We should all strive to enlarge our servant's heart. You know, that's why we should all have a ministry, to take it in, to burn it up. It's only healthy for us to have a servant's heart and expound that servant's heart. You know, it's kind of like there are those people who are givers and that's what they do. They give, they serve. Then there are those who are just takers and they give nothing back. And we can readily see an example of that, for instance, in the Holy Land with the two seas that are there. There's the Sea of Galilee and there's the Dead Sea. In the Sea of Galilee, the water comes in from the top and it flows on through the Sea of Galilee, makes the Jordan River, which eventually flows down into the Dead Sea, which has no outlet. A servant's heart would be like that of the Sea of Galilee, in that things flow in and they're ready to let things flow out.
And so they're givers.
But we also see that there are those people who are just takers and never give, and they will be kind of like the Dead Sea, and that the water just flows in, but it never gives out. Takers are the most miserable people on the planet. Timothy is our example here of a servant, the Apostle Paul's work fellow. And the end of 2 Timothy, Paul asked him to bring his coat and his parchment. He said, when you come, 2 Timothy 4:13, when you come, bring the coat. I left at Troas with Carpus. Don't forget to bring the scrolls, especially the ones made of leather. And so Paul asked him to bring his coat, bring these parchments, bring these books, you know, to run some errands for him, essentially. And the Greek word here that we use for serve in Romans 12:7, if we can serve others, we should serve. The Greek word is diakonia, which is the word from which we get the word deacon, or the concept of deacon, or servant, or ministry, here in Romans 12. But also, we go back to Acts, the 6th chapter, where many people view that the people set aside to serve there were the first deacons. It certainly uses the Greek word for deacons there. And so what did that group of people do from Acts the 6th chapter? What was their initial way? Well, they served tables. They distributed food to the widows. They were the original kitchen committee. You know, and for that reason, any and all deacons should have the gift of serving. Though this gift is certainly not limited to deacons. Now, a common misconception about this gift of serving is that it is less spiritual, since it deals with material needs rather than with the spiritual needs. Now, nothing can be further from the truth here. We could have every classroom in this building stocked with teachers, and I wish we did, and I know that one of the things Peggy was going to, she forgot, she was going to mention as a prayer request, with the attendance that we were having the first 2 weeks continues, we need more teachers, and we need to pray for more teachers. That's one of the areas we need help in. Specifically, we got some rooms that we need more people to fill as teachers and divide some of these classes up. But if every room here in this building was stocked with teachers and had kids in it waiting to be taught, but it wouldn't happen without people that would be willing to bring them in. To help make them comfortable, to help work and aid and help in some other area and assist in a lot of ways. You know, I could study all week to preach, but you wouldn't hear it without a servant making it loud enough over here. You talk about a thankless job, you know. No one looks at the person running the sound equipment until it's not working right. Isn't that right? And usually, and I've seen this a lot of times in my past experiences, people come in at the last minute and they're going to give us a special. I've seen this multiple times. And they lay it down and don't really make an announcement until they get up there. And so the sound person's up there on the last minute trying to get it in there and get the right track. Some of them used to have several different tracks and tried to find the right track for them. And so they're all standing up there and they're ready to perform, and what do? They keep looking up to the sound man like he's the reason, it's his problem. And I've seen many times when they didn't know what was going on because nobody communicated with them. But that's the problem that we find sometimes when we work with our servants. We take them for granted for what they do, and we abuse them for what they do. Well, we can do all we want to invite young families to church, but if their children aren't taken care of, for instance, back in junior church, they may not be back. You know, we need people who have servants' hearts who will do that. You know, I may be the most magnetic speaker in the area, and I may teach the most dynamic classes when we have Bible classes. But somebody has to go and work with the children and teach the children and take care of those classes. Because that's a job that needs to be done, and they are important. Let's look at the description here of a servant. First, there's an alertness to an awareness of practical needs. They see what needs to be done, and usually, without ever being told, they go and take care of those. Now, you know, they see the dishes in the kitchen, and they go and clean them up. They see the trash that's accumulated out here in the parking lot and out in front, and they pick it up. There was a piece of foam that fell off somebody's truck this week, and I, being a good servant, moved it away from the front of the road to the back, but I had every intention of picking it up. Somebody picked it up and took it away. Now, I have my suspects on that, but somebody did it. And we don't know who did it, but it was something that needed to be done. They may go out here and pull the weeds out here out of the flower garden, and we don't know who does that, who waters them and things like that. But they are all things that enhances everything. You know, when people clock in, they look at the flowers. They say, "Boy, those flowers look good," because somebody took time to bend over and pull the weeds, and somebody come took the hose and put on there. That's a servant. They're alert to needs. Secondly, they're motivated to meet needs quickly. They just can't stand delays. They don't like to formulate and talk about it. They just want to get it done. Now, I've been in meetings where the same item is on the agenda month after month after month. But for a true servant, that wouldn't be there after the first time. They would see that it is taken care of because that's their spirit. Let's get it down now. They see a broken window. We don't need to throw a committee together to determine what kind of window we want to put back in there or what kind of molding we want to put around that window. Their thought is, let's get the window back in there. Now, in the gift range, the prophet is figuring out how to who to blame. The mercy giver is standing there crying. The administrator is looking for someone to delegate it to. The teacher is trying to learn from it. The exhorter is trying to motivate someone to help. And meanwhile, the servant has already cleaned it up, boarded it up, and they're on to the next project. Now, a third thing is a disregard for personal needs. They work to meet needs with disregard for their own personal weariness. And this is where I, as a pastor, have to be very careful not to take advantage of a servant. Happens a lot. It happens a lot because servants are so willing to be involved and to do things, and they hardly ever say no, that when you find one like that, you begin to take advantage of them. You know? And pretty soon, the people with this gift will burn themselves out. You wonder, you say, you know, they were so active. Well, they used to do this, and they worked out in the kitchen and did all these meals for years and years, and suddenly, they can't even get them to come to a meal. What happened? It's because we abused them, we used them too much, because they were so willing to do things. And they will burn out. I have watched it countless times. Active people, all of a sudden, they're completely burnt out. It's because they were used too much, because they were too willing. They have a real difficulty in using that little two-letter word, no. Rotation is what we need whenever possible to help alleviate the burden. But most churches, you know, if they ask you to drive the vehicle to pick up somebody, then they expect you to do that eternally. They don't see a rotation basis in that or some of the other jobs. They just think once we got you doing it, you can keep on doing it. And then if it becomes necessary, we'll find somebody. If you run the nursery, then good for you. We got somebody to do the nursery, and we don't ever have to think about it. We expect you to do it every week. You know, I think about that in relationship to Peggy. Peggy started teaching Sunday school classes when she was 19. That was when we got married. When we got back from, I call honeymoon. It wasn't honeymoon. We just drove back from when we got married. That very next Sunday, she was teaching a Sunday school class, and she's taught a Sunday school class every since. She very rarely ever gets to sit in here and listen to a sermon. And the only time she gets to hear my sermons is either the ones that she listens to with a playback or with podcast, or when we go to special meetings and she goes with me. Those are the only times she actually hears my sermons live. But she's always taught through all these years since she was 19. And she's now, you know. But I think that's one of the things we expect. We expect some people just to do it. We don't even think about how we might be able to help a servant to keep them from burning out. Sometimes the only way that they can get away from it is to move out of town or die. So, fourth thing here is they have a great desire to complete a job once it is started. When others want to leave on work day, they'll say, there are only a few more hours and we'll have it done. And so they will stay on. And the fifth thing is that they enjoy short-term goals, but long-term goals frustrate them. You know, all their stuff is things that they want to see completed almost immediately within a short time span. They're not the people that you want to sit down in a long-range planning group because they don't have the patience for that. We need to understand that, you know. There are some people that can sit down and, boy, they'll spend all day just blowing their minds thinking about their future and putting it all down and writing to where we want to be in the future. But a servant, that's have a great impatience for that. They wouldn't be able to last probably an hour, hour and a half with that because they just want to get it done. And so they enjoy the short-term goals. They love to see things done. They like to see things materialized. Now, of course, as we've seen with each one of these spiritual gifts, we're like, there are some dangers that are involved. And the first danger here in relationship to the servant is the tendency to exclude others. I can do it faster myself, you know. And so it robs someone else of the blessing then of helping them. Sometimes they have trouble cooperating with others because they know how it's got to be done and they know exactly the way it needs to be done. And if we deviate from that, that won't work. You know? So there's really no room for somebody else that has an alternate plan to get the same thing done. And so servants, you need to learn to be a team player and try to delegate. D.L. Moody said, I'd rather get 100 men to work than do the work of 100 men. I agree with that. Second danger here is that their quickness in meeting needs sometimes makes them appear pushy. You know, since the servant works without personal weariness, they think everyone ought to work just that way. And when everyone doesn't work that way, they look on them as lazy and unmotivated. Again, we're trying to understand each other in our spiritual gifts. And just because not everyone responds the same way within the body of Christ doesn't mean that they're not interested in the spiritual progress of the body. A third thing is that their eagerness in serving makes some suspicious of them having a motive of self-advancement. You know, there's these common statements which are usually unfair and untrue that said, they always have to be in the middle of everything. You know why they're in the middle of everything? Because nobody else will get in there with them and tie up the ends. You know? They're always trying to score points with the preacher. Well, that's all right. I don't think there's anything wrong with that, scoring points with the preacher, do you? Well, I guess they think they're the only ones qualified. So we begin to judge their motives for everything. Well, perception is reality. And so do what you can to do to not appear that way. But, you know, but go beyond that. You know, as with any of these gifts, to be most effective, you have to become immune to the criticism that will come. Just be aware of your liabilities. Do your best and blow off the unfounded criticism like the water off a duck's back. Only one way to avoid all the criticism, of course, is don't do anything, you know. But where there's motion, there's friction. Fourth thing is their quickness in meeting needs of others may interfere with spiritual lessons that God is trying to teach that person. You know, they want to provide a fix and a quick fix sometimes to things that are happening in other people's lives, but God's working in that life and He has some lessons to teach that person. You have to be sensitive to what God is doing in their lives. Some people's financial needs is because of their own negligence or lack of character, you know. And God allows some to come to a point of lack in order to teach them valuable lessons. So there's always, we got to understand that God is at work and He's teaching them too. He may be teaching you how to be a servant, but He's also got lessons for them to learn. So don't be so quick. You must be prayerfully discern when to help and when not to. You never want to undermine their motivations and let them help themselves. Now, a fifth thing here is enjoyment in short-range goals can lead to frustration in achieving the big vision in the long term. Servants, the body of Christ could never function properly without you. And I take my hat off to you, and I know you don't do what you do for recognition. But here it is anyway. Some of us have our rewards right now. But most servants, you will never be richly rewarded until some future day. Not all your actions, not all your functions, not all your work will be truly recognized. Because of the nature of who you are. Because you function behind, in the background. Just seeing that things get done. But be assured that there is a God in heaven that is watching your motives, is watching your work. There's a God that will reward you for what you've done. We need every servant we can have in the body of Christ for the lubricating and functioning of the body.